Daily News, I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says the U.S. is working to find a diplomatic outcome to tensions with Iran, which has been blamed for an attack on Saudi oil facilities. But he warned if diplomacy fails, President Trump will make necessary decisions to achieve objectives. In an interview with ABC's This Week, Pompeo says both he and President Trump want to give diplomacy every chance to succeed.
To underscore the
Iranian President Hassan Rouhani said Sunday the presence of foreign forces in the Persian Gulf area would create insecurity in that region. U.S. President Trump and Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi have appeared together in Houston, Texas, Sunday before a largely Indian audience and about 50,000 people who packed a Houston stadium. Modi noted the number of people watching their appearance around the world.
Millions around the world, in different time zones, are with us today. They are witnessing history in the making.
But the U.S. and India have yet to agree on a trade deal, which has been stalled since the U.S. canceled India's special trade status. In turn, India increased tariffs on several dozen American products. U.S. President Trump has admitted talking about corruption with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, but stopped short of saying that they talked about investigating 2020 leading Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden. A Wall Street Journal report says that Mr. Trump urged Zelensky 8 times to investigate Biden and his son Hunter. Trump reportedly wanted to know whether a Ukrainian gas company tried to win favors by hiring Hunter while Joe Biden was vice president. This is VOA News. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says the U.S. is working to find a diplomatic outcome to tensions again. In Iran, Iran is being blamed for the attack on Saudi oil facilities, but Pompeo warned if diplomacy fails, President Trump will make necessary decisions and achieve objectives.
When it's the case that we no longer believe that we can convince the Iranian regime to behave in the way that we've asked them to behave, just to behave like a normal nation, I think the whole world knows, including the Iranian regime, of American military might.
Later on that same program, former Defense Secretary Jim Mattis said the U.S. needs to develop a coherent strategy with its allies for dealing with Iran.
This is an issue that's going to be best satisfied, possible outcome will come from a coalition of nations that want a stable Middle East, and that has to be our goal, to stabilize this situation.
Earlier, Iranian President Hassan Rouhani said the presence of foreign forces in the Persian Gulf area will create insecurity in that region. The Trump administration is backing away from its attempt to cut $4 billion from the amount of foreign aid distributed by the United States. VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman has that story.
Lawmakers from the Democratic and Republican parties push back, calling the plan an attempt to sidestep the authority of Congress over government spending. A White House official tells VOA that despite President Donald Trump's desire to be wise about where U.S. money is going, it is clear that there are many in Congress who are not willing to join in curbing wasteful spending. Trump earlier in the week said he was considering scaling back an effort to slash foreign aid and would decide on the proposal within days. Steve Herman, VOA News, at the White House.
Yemen's Houthi movement said early Monday that 5 civilians from one family were killed in airstrikes by the Saudi-led coalition in Omran province in Yemen, according to the Houthi-owned TV station. Yemen's Iran-aligned Houthi said that the Saudi-led coalition carried out the airstrikes on a mosque the family went to when the strikes occurred. 2 children from the same family are missing, with searches for them going under the rubble of the targeted mosque, according to that TV report. President Trump again admitting that he did talk about corruption with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. He did stop short of saying that they talked about anything pertaining to an investigation of leading Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, September the 23rd. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Malawi's Mbatho Elections Commission Chairperson breaks her silence.
What we have, the allegations, until they are proved, the matter is in court. And let the court process go through.
Dr. Jean Ansa is Malawi's Elections Commission Chairperson. There were no protests Sunday in Sudan's South Darfur state capital over shortages of bread and transport. South Sudan's government reacts to a new report alleging high government corruption, and a new UN climate report heightens calls for governments to take action to combat climate change.
I would like to see less consumption of fossil fuels. I would like to see more reliance on clean energy, like solar, like biogas. You know, that is the only way Mother Earth can heal again.
A Kenyan during climate change protest in Nairobi, and Guinean President Alpha Conde faces questions in the United States over alleged plan for a third term. Those stories for Samson O'Malley's Post are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Malawi's Mbatho Elections Commission Chairperson says the May 21, 2019 presidential election was free and fair as attested to by international observers. But Jane Ansa says what is happening now about the results are pure allegations that remain to be proven in a court of law. Two political parties, the Malawi Congress Party and the United Transformation Movement Party, have challenged the results in Malawi's constitutional court on the grounds that the election was fraudulent. Civil society organizations have held protests demanding Justice Ansa's resignation. Meanwhile, the Malawi Electoral Commission is hosting a week-long conference of election pollsters from the Southern African Development Community SADC region. Justice Ansa says the conference will focus on enhancing the credibility of elections through observation.
It was formed as a peer group to encourage and help each other. So, for this time, we are having our annual general meeting and also a seminar. And the title of the seminar is on enhancing the credibility of elections through observation.
Dr. Ansa, as you said, the purpose of the conference is enhancing elections through observation. Your critics will say that perhaps Malawi is not qualified to host this conference because they point to the fact that the May 21st election in Malawi has been tainted. So they don't think Malawi should be hosting this conference.
During the 21st election, there were international observers as well as local observers. And they gave their report after observation. And the reports are commending the elections. What we have, the allegations, until they are proved, the matter is in court, and let the court process go through.
Dr. Ansa, what do you make of all these protests and your name? Do you feel your name has been tainted or what?
Definitely. But you know that when the matter is in court, it becomes sub judice. Let the court process be completed, and then you can ask me my views afterwards. But at the moment, I cannot give you my views. I cannot comment much on matters that are in court.
In line with this conference, what do you think are some of the challenges to election observation, let's say Africa and perhaps in the SADC region?
Well, I don't really look at challenges, but maybe the purpose and the benefits. The purpose of electoral observation is to assist a country that is having the elections in holding credible, transparent elections. So the observer groups, they come maybe twice, basically election visits and polling time visits and post-election visits. So pre-election visits, they look around, they talk to all stakeholders to check on the preparedness of the country, whether the Electoral Commission has prepared enough and everything is on the ground. And during the polling, they also go to the polling stations to observe what is happening, whether people are free, are participating freely, no violence, no intimidation. And after that, they come up with a statement to comment on what they have observed. So I can see that the electoral observation teams, they help the electoral commission to do their work following the right procedures so that everything goes well and it is credible. The main issue is that the elections should be credible, transparent, inclusive, and free.
Dr. Ansah, I look forward to hearing from you once the court proceedings are decided.
Thank you very much.
Justice Jane Ansah is Malawi's Elections Commission Chairperson. She was speaking with us from the Malawian capital, Lilongwe. Sudan's new prime minister has called for an independent investigation into the crackdown on last June's protesters, reportedly killing about 128 protesters. Prime Minister Abdalla Hamdok said over the weekend that a 7-member committee will lead the investigation. Meanwhile, there were no protests on Sunday in Sudan's South Darfur state capital of Nyala over shortages of bread and transport. Reporter Namba Muhuddin in Khartoum says police used tear gas on the protesters.
The protests erupted in Niala, south of Darfur. School students went to the streets protesting the high prices of the bread and the shortages of the fuel and the high prices also of the foreign currency. And police and security forces attacked them by using tear gas and live ammunition, and there was over 20 casualties. And then AFC and SPA condemned that and called for the Sovereign Council to investigate this and to stop the violence against the protesters. Also, school students and the big protests that were at least thousands of people, they went to the state governor to resign because he is not a civilian. He is from the military, and they think that after the agreement, all of the governors in different Sudan states, they should resign because they were appointed by al-Bashir in February.
So now about the protests in Nyala and the response by the police is taking almost the same direction like the protests in Khartoum, with the police responding with tear gas.
Yes, with tear gas and live ammunition.
We hear that the Prime Minister, Hamdok, who's coming here to the United States to attend the United Nations General Assembly, has called for an investigation. What can you tell us?
Yes, so the Prime Minister called for an independent investigation because there was very huge protest in the last 2 weeks calling for justice, calling for building a judiciary system to make sure that all of al-Bashir regime symbols and people who were involved in killing the protesters will be tried at least. So it was a late response, but people are optimistic about this step because previously the military council, before it was resolved, they refused any kind of independent investigation. They formed a local committee and they have results that make people more angry. So people think that after sustaining and building at least a civilian government and after sworn in of the new cabinet, this is the main issue that it should be resolved soon.
In the meantime, the Prime Minister is coming to the United States to attend the United Nations General Assembly. He had talked about the U.S. and other Western nations lifting the sanctions against Sudan. Do you think he might be successful?
People put great hopes in this mission and in this visit because they think that Prime Minister Abdalla Hamdok has very good relationship with different countries, and they think that there is no more reason that U.S. should impose any sanctions on other countries, especially after the visits of different foreign ministers in Europe and the change of the diplomatic speech between Sudan and different countries. They think that Sudan right now is getting out of the isolation that was made by al-Bashir regime for 3 decades.
Naba, thank you very much again. We are always happy to have you on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you, James.
That was reporter Naba Muhyiddin speaking with us from Sudan's capital, Khartoum. Today is Monday, September the 23rd, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 14 minutes past the hour. South Sudan's Information Minister Michael Makui says a report by the investigative and policy group This Century is unfair and it targets the family of President Salva Kiir. Carol Van Dam of VOA's South Sudan Focus program has the details.
An investigation by the Century accuses several individuals and giant corporations from around the world, including the United States and the UK, of profiteering from South Sudan's civil war, right alongside high-ranking South Sudanese officials. Actor George Clooney, co-founder of the Century, says the Washington-based Watchdog Group showed 2 years ago how South Sudan President Salva Kiir and his then-deputy, Riek Machar, profited from the civil war. But since then, the Century has uncovered evidence of a larger web of corruption.
We showed how they, along with other generals, looted its resources and started a civil war that's cost hundreds of thousands of lives and millions of people displaced. However, these governments and these government officials did not act alone. They received money, oil, transportation, and weapons from a vast array of people and corporations all over the world who have profited from this crisis.
Clooney says the largest multinational oil consortium in the country, Dar Petroleum, provided direct support to deadly militias and paid for government officials to live lavishly while the South Sudanese people suffered the consequences of the war. At a news conference in London, Clooney said his Washington-based group reviewed thousands of pages of legal documents, audio reports, correspondence, and conducted hundreds of interviews in several countries to learn more about the web of corruption was linked to atrocities committed during the five-year war. Clooney says there are actions that can be taken to prevent war profiteers from causing more damage. He says most of South Sudan's warlords and leaders continue to loot South Sudan with impunity, however.
The methods they use to siphon off millions remain unchanged, and they have so far faced minimal, if any, disruption. In fact, many continue to live in wealth and luxury, even as millions of South Sudanese continue to suffer from the horrors of violence and corruption.
Clooney says banks and governments can play a key role in turning things around.
The good news is the banks and governments around the world can create consequences, and they can build the necessary leverage for systematic change in South Sudan. It benefits the people instead of the extraordinarily corrupt.
South Sudan's information minister says the Century report is unfair and targets the family of President Salva Kiir.
It is targeting the family of the president, and this is something planned, concocted, and especially planned to coincide with the current development. Because we are moving towards peace, a situation must be created so that it is seen to be a different thing altogether. These are people who are paid for that object.
The Century and other activists are pushing the government for more transparency.
That report by Carol Van Dam of VOA South Sudan in Focus program. A new UN climate report heightens calls for governments to do something about combating climate change. The report by World Meteorological Organization says sea level rise, planetary warming, shrinking ice sheets, and carbon pollution have accelerated over the last several years. The report comes as the UN this week hosts the Climate Action Summit in New York. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, Kenyans demonstrated on Friday calling on President Uhuru Kenyatta to join world leaders in fighting climate change.
Tomorrow, Tuesday, 24th to 30th September, millions of people will be marking the Climate Change Week as thousands of political leaders and delegates are already in the United States for the Global Climate Action Summit. Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta, who is attending the summit, has been urged by Kenyans to join other leaders in fight against climate change as Kenya faces drought and food shortage. A protester in Kenya, Crispus Mungai, a climate specialist, said that Kenya should embrace green energy.
I would like to see less consumption of fossil fuels. We'd like to see more reliance on clean energy, like solar, like biogas. You know, that is the only way Mother Earth can heal again.
The United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres has asked leaders to lay up new mechanisms to deal with climate change. UNICEF author James Elder, speaking in Nairobi during the demos, said that public and private sector should come up with strategies to manage climate change.
What Secretary General is now asking is for heads of states and from civil society, from private sector, to come with information on their actions. What will they do? What he's further asking is that the financiers, so whether it's public financiers or private sector financiers, is coming and stating their willingness to invest in these actions, then that let's say the implementers are delivering.
Kenya and other African countries are facing starvation as most of them depend on relief food. Kenya's principal secretary, State Department of Agricultural Research, Hamadi Boga, said that Kenya should reconsider growing crops that can sustain harsh weather conditions.
Part of the challenge is overemphasis on maize. It's a big challenge. It's a cultural thing. Maize is a new crop to Kenya. It came here about 100 years ago with the British people. Our crops, the African crops, are sorghum, millet, cassava. We were food secure with them. And we abandoned them and went into maize. But only about 5% of Kenya is very suitable for maize.
Earlier this year, Tropical Cyclone Idai, one of the worst tropical cyclones on record to affect Africa, experiencing south of the continent, redirected moisture away from East African region. This delayed the March to May long rains affecting the planting season in Kenya, with about 98% of Kenya's agricultural activities rain-fed, threatened by climate change. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Moreno Jambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
As Guinean President Alpha Conde visits the United States, he faces questions over his alleged efforts to amend the Constitution and stay in power for a third term. Viewer Salem Solomon has the story.
As Guinea's president visits the U.S. preaching economic development, a debate rages back home about term limits. President Alpha Conde spent the week visiting U.S. diplomats, granting interviews and meeting with business leaders. Speaking to VOA's French to Africa service, he said his goal is to attract investment and transform his country's economy, which historically has been heavily dependent on mineral extraction.
Guinea has potential. We don't want to be providers of primary materials. We want businesses to come here, work here, and create value. My dream is that Africa becomes not only a factory for Africa, but also a factory for the world.
But observers are voicing concern about the state of Guinea's young democracy. Conde was elected in 2010 in the country's first free and fair election in nearly 50 years. According to Guinea's constitution, he must leave office next year after his second term expires. But a campaign has emerged, believed to be supported by Conde and his allies, to strike down the term limits restriction. Conde instructed Prime Minister Ibrahima Kasori Fafona to travel the country and gather opinions about the amendment. Alex Boucher, an assistant research fellow at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies in Washington, says the move has provoked a backlash.
Changing those term limits requires writing a completely new constitution and submitting it to Parliament for approval and then submitting it to referendum, to popular referendum for approval there, and then seeking a third term would be permissible.
According to a 2018 poll by Afrobarometer, 82% of Guineans support a two-term limit. Additionally, more than 70% prefer democracy to single-party rule. For his part, Conde is keeping an arm's length from the question of constitutional amendment.
I did not come to discuss politics. I came here for business.
But when asked directly how long he intends to stay in power, Conde said,
only God knows, and the people of Guinea. It's normal. The people are sovereign. I want to remind you, the United States have changed the constitution 27 times. So it's normal that we ask the people. The world evolves. It's normal to understand what people want. That has nothing to do with an election. It's about knowing whether children are protected enough, etc.
Guineans in the diaspora are expressing their opposition. On September 11, Guineans living in the U.S. held a protest outside the State Department. Talibi Ba, Vice President for Foreign Relations and Communications of the opposition Liberal Bloc Party, told VOA's Daybreak Africa that opposition members urged U.S. leaders to question Conde on his aspirations to extend his time in office.
Alpha Conde is not here just for the United Nations. He is here to campaign for getting a third term in direct violation of the Guinean constitution.
Ba also said Guinea was scheduled to hold legislative elections earlier this year, but none have taken place. This, he said, is further evidence of Conde's tightening control over the country's political process. But Conde said he's not concerned by the criticism, particularly coming from people living outside the country.
Guinea is a sovereign country. It showed it by voting no in 1958. Guinea is independent and sovereign. Therefore, Guinean affairs are discussed in Guinea, not outside.
Salem Solomon, with Abdurrahman Dia and James Buddy, VOA News, Washington.
This time now for Daybreak Africa Exposing, here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with the COSAFA Women's Under-17 Championship, where South Africa's Under-17 Women's team shattered all previous COSAFA records in an unprecedented 28-0 win over the Seychelles on the second day of the 2019 COSAFA Women's Under-17 Championship at the St. Francois Xavier Stadium on Saturday. Captain Jessica Wade, Nabila Gallant, and Sonika Nzigili scored hat-tricks as 11 players got their names on the scores sheet. It came after Yaun Modise and Christiana Munyasi both scored twice to lead Botswana to a one-sided 6-0 drubbing of Madagascar in the opening Group B outing. South Africa's one-sided victory significantly betters their record 17-0 scoreline that the country's senior women's side set just over a month ago when they defeated Comoros at the COSAFA Women's Championship in Port Elizabeth. Away from the COSAFA Women's Championship, Portuguese tactician Antonio Conceição da Silva Oliveira has been named as the new Cameroon head coach. The immediate former CFR Cluj boss, commonly known as Tony Conceição, will replace former Dutch international Clarence Seedorf, who was relieved of his duties after the Indomitable Lions failed in their bid to defend their African Cup of Nations title, being eliminated in the round of 16 by Nigeria during the 2019 African Cup of Nations staged in Egypt. And in West Africa, Amanda Clinton, the only female aspirant in the Ghana Football Association presidential race, has submitted her nomination forms as she bids to become Ghana's first female football president. Amanda Clinton told reporters shortly after submitting her forms that she is ready to take Ghana football to the next level if elected as president of the Ghana Football Association.
If the GFA, which is made up of completely males, and they have lawyers they're working with, they have lawyers in Ghana, and they came to me, it means that they saw something that meant this woman won't sleep until she gets the job done. And that is what I propose I can do, should I be given the opportunity.
Vetting for the aspirants is scheduled for September 26th to October the 1st, with the elections slated for October the 25th. And finally, in cricket news, South Africa's keeper Quinton de Kock led from the front to guide South Africa to an emphatic 9-wicket victory over India in the third and final T20 at the Makchinsawi Stadium on Sunday. South Africa thus leveled the series 1-1. The visitors chased down the target of 135 with 19 balls to spare, where Quinton de Kock won the Player of the Series award for making 131 runs in two innings. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. At least 20 Somali government soldiers were killed and 18 others were wounded when Al-Shabaab raided a military base south of Mogadishu, according to security sources. The sources said militants detonated a suicide car bomb at the El Salim military base, followed by an infantry attack in the early hours of Sunday. Malawi's Mbatho Elections Commission chairperson says the May 21st, 2019 presidential election was free and fair, as attested to by the international observers. But Jean Ansa says what is happening now about the results are pure allegations that remain to be proven in a court of law. Two political parties, the Malawi Congress Party and the United Transformation Movement Party, have challenged the results in Malawi's constitutional court. That is it for this Monday, September 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Greg Burns, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, world leaders gather in New York for the United Nations General Assembly, plus growing Africa's agriculture. On the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hey,
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports, Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.